What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Behind the Crossfader, episode 18. We're legal now. Woohoo, party time. I'm DJ Fatso Terry Haymore.
And I'm George Gonzalez, Arizona's DJ Hurricane.
And today we have the peeps, DJ Apprentice and DJ Shot, Behind the Crossfader, baby. Welcome once again.
That's right. And like we always start off the show, we want to thank again our boy Dave and the Man Cave for allowing us to record in this beautiful place.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, if you ain't never been here, you don't want to leave here. You know, once you get here.
It's like, exactly. Like if there was like if men got their asses kicked and abused men, like abused men's shelter,
this would be
and everything. We'll come here all battered up and everything there.
So, guys, welcome to the show. It's a real honor to have... you know, what you guys, like 2/3 of the mix show team now over at Hot 98, or probably half because Payback still does some mixes. So, you know, we've had the honor of having Kid Cuts and Payback on the show, and now we got the final two pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
DJ Shock and DJ Apprentice are in the house with us tonight. So it's really good to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having us out.
So let's start with you, Shock, and why don't you tell everyone how you got your start and, you know, where you cut your teeth.
All right, well, I guess I would have to say when I was 14, I got my first set of turntables for Christmas. It was a Stanton, like, 201K package. It's, you know, a shitty two-channel mixer. Straight arm.
Yeah.
I think it was belt drive.
It was belt drive. Yeah.
Now, did your folks get it for you?
Yes.
It's somewhat adorable when your parents get you DJ equipment, or even your girlfriend. Like people that don't, anybody who don't know anything much about DJing, it's kind of adorable where they get you a crappy thing and it's like, well, they're turntables, they'll do, and they just give it to you.
It's like giving your son that first drum set when he's a kid, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Instead of getting the real deal. So.
I remember Christmas Day, I would go in the garage, and my parents had a bunch of records, classic rock, Temptations. So I would just take those and kind of mess with it a little bit.
Right.
And then eventually, I started going to Amoeba Records and doing a little bit of record hunting and finding tracks that I could play at parties and whatnot. And I guess I'm kind of fortunate to have a few years of using vinyl, because I know a lot of cats. You know, Serato obviously has blessed a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I still feel like, hey, I still spent a lot of money. I was out there grinding, looking for the records.
Yeah,
I had a little CD player underneath the table just in case the records would skip.
Yeah,
I
had that too.
So,
where exactly was Amoeba Records?
Amoeba Records is on Vine, I think. Vine in Hollywood area.
Oh, okay. Right on.
Yeah,
right.
It's a huge...
So that's where you grew up?
Yes. Well, I grew up in Pasadena.
Oh, okay.
In Los Angeles, but we would go there a lot and spend a lot of time just seeing what they had, old, new. You know, my parents got tired of me messing up their records, so...
They said, go get your, get your own.
Yeah.
Go
get your own.
No, my man, you got to get your own.
So vinyl, pretty much, you just said you got started. When did you make the transition from vinyl to CD?
I think when I was 16, Serato hit. I heard about it from somewhere, and luckily my dad had a little connection at Guitar Center.
Right.
So
parent of the year.
Yeah, so I saved up some money, and I bought Serato, and then it went downhill from there.
Uphill.
That's cool though, man.
Well, Apprentice, why don't you give us a little bit of history about yourself?
I started with when I was 13. I used to go with D-Wayne back when it was the Bum Steer, and Saul Cardenas is actually the one that introduced me to him, and you know, D-Wayne and DJ Sue, his brother, so they would take me to the Bum Steer when I was 13.
Shout out to Saul.
Yeah, he opened doors for a lot of stuff that I did. So I remember just carrying D-Wayne's records bags, his turntables.
God, the old school
just,
way
like,
of earning your keep
so,
as a
like,
DJ.
When there was nobody there, he would just let me practice on vinyl and stuff like that.
Yeah, but you have to remember, he was 13, 14 at the time. Like getting into the Bum Steer, man.
That was a crazy time, but
that's like those old blues juke joints and everything. Those little numbers running, like hustling gambling spots, and they get like a little kid to be do the runnings
go
and the errand, boy and the mafia. That's
exactly
how you were with DJs there. So,
so
that's tight,
man. And I mean, when high school came around, I was more of a jock in school, so I would just do that in school. And then when I graduated, that's when, you know, I got my hands on some turntables and stuff like that, and I got back into it. And then I met up back with Dwayne, and that's when he brought me into the radio and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Right on.
So yeah. That's cool, man. It's been great.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, yeah. I know you got a couple of stories you want to share with us from the old Bumsteer days, don't
yeah.
you? Come on, don't be shy. This is not the place or the time to be shy.
It was so crazy the first night. This is when Beyonce's Naughty Girl was out. Huge single.
Right.
And so
right.
they were giving away CDs, and it was R-Dub and Payback and Sue. They were all in the DJ booth.
Uh-huh.
And so they're like, all right, first five Naughty Girls to up to the DJ booth. Get a free CD.
Yeah.
So I'm right there sitting down like I am right here, you know, uh-huh. in the corner. I don't know what I'm doing. Uh-huh. And then these girls are like, okay, you gotta show us how you're a Naughty Girl so you get the CD.
Oh, man.
These girls start taking off their shirts. Yeah. You know, and I'm just sitting down and they start dancing on me.
It's kind of funny when you
talk
think
about an education.
Yeah. yeah. And then, you know, ever since then, I'm like, all right, I'm going to be a DJ now.
Yeah, that's it. That's a done deal
yeah,
or everything.
Yeah, done deal right after that.
And then nowadays, CDs don't have much value to them now. It's kind of funny how.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So, I mean, it was cool. And then, so I would go back from that, you know, time to time and go to the Bumsteer. And, you know, D-Way wouldn't let me open for him. So it was cool.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. I could just imagine. Just imagine the boner he was holding at 14.
Oh, golly. Getting turned out.
Getting turned out at 14 years old.
Coming to manhood and DJ hood in the same night.
That's right,
there,
man.
So.
That's right.
That place was legendary, man.
Oh, man, it was. That was probably one of the craziest times ever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because that's when there was a lot going on, you know. I mean, Gotham New West and Outback and even right across the street at the Wildcat House, that was still jumping
exactly,
pretty good. So,
exactly.
I mean, you know, there was definitely some wild things going on. And,
I remember it used to be Penny Drinks. Penny Pitchers. So I would just see cases of beers, like, at the end of the night when I would wait for my dad to pick me up. I would just see cases of beers out there. Just, I'm like, wow, this... I don't know what's going on right now.
Did you ever, like, Dad, you should see what happened to me today.
Yeah.
You give him the stories.
Yeah. I think he expected, you know, what was going
awesome,
on. But,
yeah.
So
that's cool. Awesome there. That's pretty cool, though, man. It seemed like back then clubs really had a longer lifespan. It seemed like lately they're just getting shorter and shorter and shorter now,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
you know, we just named, like, Bumsteer, but right across the street another one was jumping. And they were equally jumping, you know, the Wildcat House and Bumsteer, you know, so.
Yeah, man, it was crazy back then.
So, Shock, what was your first club experience?
When I first came here to go to the U of A in 06, I went to a club called it was Envy, Real Hood.
Oh, man, I remember Envy over there on Wilmont. Yeah.
And we used to go there on a Tuesday. They had a college night, and they had two rooms, and the other room was always empty. Mm-hmm. So I would beg the owner every night. I'd be like, please, can I do a trial? I'll do it. Free,
right.
And maybe a month later, he finally said, all right. So I went there and did a little trial. And then the next time, they hired me. I was only getting paid like $40 a night, but I didn't care because, you know, I was at a nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, you know, I was on top of the world. But Envy popped off every Friday. Something went down after. Every gunshots, every week.
Wow.
Well, that's kind of why they only lasted, you know, a little while. As they did, you know what I mean? But, yeah, you know, it was definitely, like you said, it was definitely hood over there. And, I mean, you know, you never knew what was gonna go off at that place.
See,
know?
That
I
makes up for all those years you weren't DJing with vinyl. Yes. That's that paying your dues, you know, without the vinyl thing. So, that's good.
Yeah, it helped. And the good thing was, I feel like even though those clubs are really ghetto, they're the most fun because everyone's just hyped. And
yeah, everyone's
just crazy and they're ready to go.
So you were in school at the time when you were DJing?
Yeah,
you
I was
DJing?
A freshman at the U of A when I first came.
Did you get
here.
A chance to do any parties on campus?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Eventually,
ones,
it took me probably a few years, but sophomore year, I was DJing a lot of athlete parties. I was doing fraternity, sorority parties.
Talk about naughty girls.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Oh,
God. So,
shit, no women. I DJ.
And I thank the athletes. You know, luckily I ran. You know, I knew a lot of basketball players and football players, so they would always be like, "Yo, shot.
Yeah.
You need shot. Go get shot."
Oh, that's tight.
So that, you know, I really thank them because it's all about networking.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
and
sure
grinding,
is.
Especially in a college town, you have all these DJs who want to DJ the parties that. Know, all the basketball players are at.
Yeah.
Jamel Horn, you know, Derek Williams.
Yeah.
Those are like exclusive parties, so I was really thankful to be able to be there and see this
madness. Yeah. You had the inside track.
Yeah.
What's happening there? So.
so
And then from there, man, how'd you make the transition out of that there to?
Well,
you kept doing it a few years after, I bet.
Yeah, I was doing it until I would say my senior year, which was 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2008, I remember I found Roger on MySpace, and I would message him at least twice a week. You know, here's my demo tapes. Is there anything I can do? And he would say the same thing. Oh, we like your tapes, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, right.
So 3 years went by, same thing, Dwayne, oh, and then, you know, they finally sat me down and told me that news that I was going to be on their mixer, and it was like a dream come true.
Right.
So when did it actually sink in that you were part of the mix show team? Like, was it right away, like, you were like, yeah, or, I mean, did it take a little while before it actually sunk in?
Well, I was really nervous because I had my, you know, I got put on, I practiced, then they took me off for a few months because the programming wasn't there, the mixes weren't as clean.
Right? Yeah.
So once there was a time where Dwayne called me, it was like a couple months ago, and he said, hey, I heard your mix, the programming was flawless, and that's when I was like, wow. You know, after almost a year into working my way up, you know, Apprentice and the other guys, luckily they already had a lot more experience.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, they helped me through that journey, and now I finally get how radio should sound and
sure.
what we need to do
yeah.
to make it sound hot.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't understand that, you know, it's not your format, it's their format.
Mm-hmm.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? I mean, you know, we get, I hear it all the time from local and national DJs that, you know, the local DJs don't get any love, and, you know, but a lot of times DJs are stuck, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but that, you know, you want to play your music or the mixes you like or the songs you like, but, you know, you just don't get it when you're on the air. They tell you,
yeah.
you know, pretty much you get a little bit of a wiggle room, but, you know, you pretty
yeah.
much have to stick to that format, to their program.
Exactly.
And not everyone can, you know, I don't know if you
yeah.
can say humble yourself to just accepting that,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of people just won't accept it and refuse
yeah.
to
well,
do
like
it.
People that aren't in that position, they don't understand.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I look at it as the ultimate training ground for doing parties in which you're doing the same thing where you're trying to stick to a format,
yeah.
a playlist or so. This is like on a bigger stage.
Yeah.
And it's something like, you know, it's valuable. It taught me a lot when I mixed there, I think between maybe, I think 98 to like maybe 02 or so. I'm not sure, but it kind of prepped me up to, you know, I still use, me and George was just talking about this. We use the same terminology, some
yeah.
of the things we learned from then. So,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
something you can take from it there. And I also got to give props to Hot 98. They put a lot of DJs on.
Yeah, they really did. You know, I mean, you know, it's unfortunate that not everyone that's really talented gets the opportunity. But, I mean, it is true, you know, that over the years, Dwayne has really put on some good talent.
He really helped us out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And especially with the recent addition, you know, having Kid Cudi join the crew, you know, that was definitely a good move in the right direction. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Kid Cudi's great. So,
yes,
yeah,
he really is. He really is.
Yeah. And it's especially important during the vinyl drought. How Hot 98 really helped a lot of us DJs out there. So.
Oh, yeah. You know, you keep talking about the vinyl drought, but for us, it really
wasn't
a drought.
It wasn't really about,
really
the quote-unquote vinyl drought.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. Well,
that's
when most people stopped, you know, being able to get records, but it still
we were
was,
like raining.
It was
raining vinyl.
Oh, yeah.
I was like lighting my cigarette on records.
You know those
yeah.
It's like, you know, instead of
melting them.
Using that
but
toilet
you know,
paper.
The mail carts,
I mean, we would get.
I still have
one
a whole bunch of those
every
there.
Day.
Yeah.
Every single day, and
wow.
if you missed a day, you'd have two, three backed up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then also, it took a lot of time to kind of weed through those. You had to sit
yeah.
there and listen to every record.
And
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You knew right away what the hot labels were. You know, you could see Arista's peeking out and Def Jam, and so you knew right kind of to go there
yeah.
right away. But there was still, you know, back when Profile, you know, and.
Mm-hmm.
Who else am I thinking about?
TNT.
Well, there was TNT. That's right, TVT records. Yeah.
Every that was like that. Just doing that taught me so much about how music work and how our ears work, because you got like a ton of music that they put right in front of you. You can only play a certain amount of it. How are you gonna choose it? What do you look for? What do you listen to? Yeah. And that taught me so much. And I remember literally having like those crates of records and setting the needle down and listening for about like 4 seconds, 4 or 5 seconds.
And then, and then
you know, I should have became like a manager of some hip hop artists or so, because I started giving them advice, and I would tell them like, when you come out just slam it. You better come out, make that hook the first thing you hear.
Yeah, exactly.
So you gotta
just
come
like
out.
The first 30 seconds, and then you're like,
we do not have time. Exactly. That's all it is. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I told one person to buy some of the cheap CD players, like $20. Uh-huh. You know, cheap. I said, put your CD in there, glue that shit shut, and just mail it to them like that. Just mail the damn CD player. And they press play, because we do not have time.
Yeah.
We do not have time.
Yeah, right.
It was tough, so.
So, back in the days, I remember having a real good relationship with A&Rs from all of the stations. Do you guys still talk to them one-on-one?
Well, we talk to them when they come in town. Yeah, but I mean, we have a lot of. I'm still in school, so I have a lot of stuff going on that I don't get a chance to meet a lot of, you know, record reps and stuff like that. But yeah, whenever they do come in town and we're free, you know, we hang out with them. They push records to us and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, we still hang out with them when they come in town.
That's cool. Strip clubs and everything. I miss those days there. I
haven't gotten there yet.
Let's not open up that door right now.
That was the bomb,
man.
George.
Man,
they come into town.
I plead the fifth.
Take you out to dinner.
You guys had it made back then.
It used to be a lot different back then. I hear stories.
It was a little different back then.
I remember I was up in Phoenix with a Def Jam rep, and she had like a credit card from the company. And she was like, compliments to Russell Simmons. That's what she kept telling me.
Man, all we get now is like a bag of Jolly Rangers. and that's it, man. Like, alright, you know what, I'll take a listen.
right.
That's one of the things that's always changing, because even before, you know, my time in radio, I heard stories like, say, in the 60s and early 70s, where you get like a 45 and they'll turn it upside down and wait for money to drop out.
Money
drop out of it or so, then they'll play
you play that one.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, it was really bad back then there. So,
well, there was, you know, I think there was a time where they even had to sign agreements that, like, the radio station would have to sign agreements that you weren't going to take money to play a record.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I haven't got a penny.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean the dinner.
I'll take cocaine.
You know
what
I
mean?
Anything out except money.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised they do that. It's like sprinkle in each record. They just sprinkle a little bit in each record they send to the station. They probably did some wild stuff.
Yeah, who knows?
Out of the wild, wild west.
It really was. It was a lot of fun. So
Let's bring that days. Let's bring those days back.
We can barely get a girl into the lobby. You know? let alone have her sit in the studio while we're mixing. Like, damn.
Real bad.
Yeah, well, you know, now there's cameras all in the building, and I mean, you got to have that pass card just to get in after hours, and you know, it didn't used to be quite like that. You know,
we could thank Dwayne, right? The old Dwayne.
Come on, Dwayne.
I don't know. There was some pretty bad offenders back in those days, but I mean, you know, it was definitely a lot more loose. You know, you had the chance to break records. That's when we were. It was our job to break new records. You know, it wasn't like okay, well, let's wait till this song hits on the East Coast, or let's wait till it gets so many, you know, BDS numbers before we play. I mean, this was like, you know, you got it, you liked it, you popped it. You know, I even remember I was with a local rap group. That I was like, I'm just gonna open my 12 o'clock mix with them. You know what I mean? And as long as you followed it with the currents that are coming up, I didn't really get a whole lot of feedback for that. It was just, you know, it's like, all right.
Mm-hmm. We can get away with it. I mean, on a Saturday night, sometimes Friday nights we'll throw in a few records, but obviously maybe a record that Power plays in LA
or
some other city that we don't really get the chance to play because either they haven't heard it or it doesn't fit for Tucson, but we'll slide it in there. But like you said, following a Power immediately after.
Absolutely,
Or
getting two good recurrents.
Like a 143 or something.
Right, exactly.
Because, you know, people tune out real easily these days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna lie. You know, I do it sometimes too. You know what I mean? Just if it's if it's a song that I go, oh, I don't know about this one. Let's see what else is going on. You know what I mean? So you're right. You're right. The average listener, you know, really wants to feel like you're playing for them. And the demo's always been, you know, like 14 to 19 year old girls anyway, you know, as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. So that's what you really got to hit when you're pushing these records. So do you guys get a chance to go to like the music conferences? Do you guys get a chance to do anything like that?
We haven't had a chance to do like huge music conferences. I've been wanting to.
I will be happy to go in your place.
Yeah, I'm still trying to beg Dwayne to let me go.
See if Nicki Minaj's ass is real. I'll be the one to go. I'll have that Hot 98 placard.
Yeah,
I'll be the one in cuffs.
Yeah, man. Like we were saying, it used to be like a lot different back then. I hear stories from
even
everybody
back then. Yeah.
Dwayne,
oh man, they'll send everybody
Hurricane,
to Puerto Rico.
Oh, man. It used to be so amazing back then. I just could envision it, you know. Sure. I'm like, wow. I wish it's still.
Well, you got a taste of it at the Boom Steer.
Yeah. I got a taste of it. So. Yeah.
Even though his bedtime was 10 o'clock.
Yeah, right. You didn't have no bedtime. You was there till 2 a.m.
I was 21.
You still don't look 21, man. I don't know how you got away with it when you were 14.
Yeah.
You
know?
There, so. Speaking of that, last week at Cervezas, bouncer, remember that?
Oh, yeah, man, because I was bald for the longest time, and I decided to let my hair grow out.
Right.
And so the last three places I've been going to, they've been giving me a hard time with the ID.
Really?
They're asking
because your hair's
changed.
Yeah,
they're asking me, like, oh, what's your address, zip code? And I'm like, it's been a trip, man, so I just been staying home now. Yeah.
That's tight, man.
Yeah, I remember showing up to Cerveza's, and they were all sitting in their little corner. And I'm thinking to myself, man, they need to have at least 6 girls around them right now. You know what I mean?
You guys would have had 6 girls, but times are different, brother.
That's so funny, man. So.
Yeah.
So as far as like your introduction to big clubs, Shock, you know, we know you're at Zen Rock on Friday nights. You're doing RPM on Saturdays. Was that something that came along with doing the college parties, or did the radio kind of hit that off for you?
Well, Jamel Horn, he used to play basketball at the U of A. He knew Chris Daniels, who I would say is, you know, probably one of the bigger promoters here in Tucson.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, he's worked very hard to get there, and he introduced me to him. So he said, you know what, I'm starting a La Fuente during the summer. This is 2010. I'll have you spend a few nights and see how it goes. And then they had me at Pearl right when it ended. And then after that, Chris said, you know what, you're my DJ. I'll take you around everywhere.
Right on.
So I thank him for...
Shout out to Chris for sure.
Yeah, he definitely opened doors for me. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand, you know, they think that, oh, this guy has the hookup here or the hookup here, but you just got to grind.
You got to earn it. That's for sure. Yeah.
Like, you know, Apprentice, when he first started out, he had to make mixes at home. They had to sneak him through the back door, kind of like I'm doing
now. Right,
but as you can see, he stuck with it.
Yeah, right.
He grinded it out, and he's working his way up. He's on air now, so.
Yeah.
You got a residence now, don't you?
Yeah, I'm at Sapphire now on Saturday night.
It's a little different
there. I mean, I'm so used to playing hip-hop all week, so it's cool because I get to play, you know, more dance stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm really into the disco, you know, disco house stuff, so I like playing that. So it's cool, man. I like it there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you can get, not burned out, but it can burn on you, you know, playing the same style.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
Week,
yeah,
know,
even
you know?
Even if it's your specialty, you know.
Yeah,
and I had that experience once when it's like, okay, funk, all funk.
Right.
And I did it like one night, and just by doing it one night, I realized that I don't think I can do this just this. I have to keep switching it up.
Yeah,
because it'll wear on you after a while. You know?
So,
me personally.
So let's go through equipment check, Prentice. What are you playing on these days?
I'm playing on some Technics M5Gs.
Okay.
And with a 900 Nexus. I used to have a different. Well, I used to have the same turntables, but some guys decided to break into my house.
Yeah,
so
man, that's
they stole
that's
all my
real
stuff,
sad,
you know.
Yeah.
So I had a Rain 57. I love that thing, you know.
Oh,
I
my God.
I knew that thing like the back of my hand.
Right.
The decks and everything.
Oh,
so.
That sucks. Ugh.
So, I mean, they took everything in, but, you know, it's cool now, you know. I'm still doing my thing.
Sure,
so.
of course. Yeah, but you hate to hear that. I mean, you know, I haven't had that much experience, but I remember leaving a a bag of records in my car and somebody smashing the window to get
Really?
And I mean, you know, and that hurt like crazy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, those
You know, my records went everywhere with me, you know what I mean? So so I could understand, you know, that
Exactly.
But the 900 Nexus, that's a great mixer.
Oh yeah, I love it, you know. Like I never really messed around with Pioneer mixes that much, but oh man, I love it, you know.
Yeah, dual effects engines. I mean, you get
exactly.
You know, you got separation on each channel. Have you installed the inner fader yet?
No, I haven't. I like the fader that it has now.
Yeah,
you know, it's
yeah.
really smooth. So
right.
Yeah, so I like it how it is now.
What about you, Shock?
Well, on Friday nights we use the MK3s, I think, with the 57 mixer, and then on Saturday nights the club has a Pioneer 600, which you know I make it work. And I'll switch in between turntables and CDJs.
Yeah lately we've been using the Pioneer 707.
Yes, which has been a big difference.
Yeah,
in terms of sound and you know, the quality.
I remember the first time going in there, I'm like, that mixer's already maxed out. You know, it's hitting the red and flashing, and you can barely hear anything coming out of the speakers, man.
Wow.
I mean, you know, Pioneer made, you know, makes great, great mixers. You know, I think maybe that one might just be a little bit past its time. You know what I mean?
The 500?
It's the
600.
Yeah. That's the one that we have at the station.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Rough.
Yeah, man. We need to upgrade real quick.
Yeah,
what I'm starting to notice with the Pioneer mixers, they seem like the type of mixers where each DJ can get comfortable with them on their own. Like, you can find what works for you. They're like a what works for you type of mixer.
Oh yeah, Pioneer's been making great products for a long, long time.
Yeah, where you know one, you know, people, it'll be like, you know, well, this fits me, and then you'll see a different mixer that fits another guy, and it's just what works for them there.
Exactly. It took me a while to get adjusted to the Pioneer mixer too. You know, like as far as effects and stuff like that, because I also used to the 57, where you know you just push the knob and right away the echo.
Oh yeah,
goes,
yeah.
You know, so I wasn't used to the tap button. And so now I have to tap, and but I like it because I like to echo and scratch at the same time with you know local echo effects. So I like that, man.
Yeah. I'm in the market right now for a mixer actually, so I'm just kind of shopping around.
Don't worry, I got you hooked up.
Maybe in another week or so, I'll be able to get one.
Yeah.
So speaking about gigs, you know. You know, I always ask our DJs, like, how do you prepare for your gigs? But how is it that you prepare for an on-air shift, like, whether mixing or actually, you know, being the jock there?
Oh, okay. I usually like to, like, prep, you know, especially now that I have the night show, so I don't talk about the same thing all the time, you know.
Yeah.
But you always have to hit, you know, the spots that they want you to talk
about
and stuff like that. And then being on-air mixer, you don't want to sound the same as you did the day before either. But, you know, so you have to do some kind of creativity. You can't do too much, you know, but you have to do something.
So how much time do you think you spend in preparation, like before before you're – and why don't you tell everybody what shift you have on Hot 98?
I'm on the air from 6 to 11 p.m. on Hot.
Okay.
And, but I do the 5 o'clock traffic jam at 5 o'clock. So I'm there from 5 to 11.
Okay.
And
it's tight.
But, yeah, so I usually get there maybe like an hour and a half early just, you know, see what new music we could play and, you know, what I could do, what, something creative that I could do and stuff
it's
like
tight.
That, what to talk about.
Yeah.
So, it takes some time. It takes some time, you know, so.
Now, do you prepare different, like, say, on the weekends when you get a little bit more
Format, the weekend, you know, it's a little more different because we have, like, these mix show records that, you know, we could play.
Trying to,
you know, it's a little different than 5 o'clock,
out.
Where 5 o'clock you have to keep it more mainstream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is cool. Yeah.
Shock,
good.
Have you had the chance to be on air yet?
They throw me on, you know. they embarrass me a little bit here or there.
You know, I think for me, that was one of the things I didn't want to do. I didn't want to be on air as far as, like, you know. So for mixers back then, they made us do overnights. We were, you know, and so it was cool because I would come from the club straight to the station and then be on the air till like, what, 5 in the morning when the morning show came on, you know what I mean? But I personally, you know, wasn't one, you know, to continue that avenue, you know, as far as
I'm
on
still
air.
Trying to work on it, man, because, you know, I'm so much of a mixer, I never thought about being on air.
Yeah.
And now it's a little more different now because we have a mic in the mix room, so I'll be talking to D-Wayne while I'm trying to, you know, cue up the next song and scratch it in.
That's awesome, there.
Yeah, so it's a little different.
I would love to have been doing it in that format.
Chatting with the guy. So it's pretty cool. It makes it more fun, but it's a little bit more work.
What's your preparation for mix show, Shock?
I think going through my crates and trying to figure out in terms of the programming aspect of it, which powers I'm going to play. And then even look at last week, you know, just remember what I did last week and say, instead of starting out with, like, Make It Nasty, maybe change it to, like, a 94 BPM,
right.
Leave You Alone record.
Right, or,
and then,
it or something like that.
And then go back down and then maybe start the next mix with, like, an 80 BPM birthday cake.
I noticed that you do use a lot of transitions in your mixes. I like that because, you know, you have a tendency. Every one of us, we start at 94 and want to end at 100. But a lot of times, you know, you'll go to 94, 97, and then go back down to 80 or into the 77.
That's good, yeah.
And I like
Apprentice
that.
Apprentice has a ton of transitions. I still need to steal some from him. But he has a
my flash
king.
Drive right now. Too.
Yeah, he has some really good transitions.
Yeah,
but.
I'm starting to see a lot of DJs really focus on that too, like working on even editing beats and just to, you know, be able to piece those songs together because it's not about the beat per minute, you know, as far as the energy level. It's just it doesn't matter. People automatically assume that a 90 BPM means that it's, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So everybody, though, like George was saying, they'll kind of put everything in sequence, the beat per minute, and they'll just work up. And it'll be cool, you know, for a change to be able to just jump around and even do cool. You don't have to necessarily even blend them, just, you know, some kind of transition, like we're saying, you know.
Exactly.
So that's awesome there. So
when you guys, I mean, you talked about the record shop that you used to go to on Hollywood and Vine. What other spots were there that you would go digging for?
We had a place, I would say about 5 minutes from my crib. I'm trying to think of the name. I don't remember the name, but I would always go there, and they would have the funky mixes and the Lethal Weapons.
Right.
Nice. So those were like a lifesaver to me because I would get,
especially for radio, man.
Yes,
it helped out.
I mean, I'm sure you guys got hooked up for free.
I had tons of those. Yeah.
And you know, to pay $12 for six songs instead of paying $6 for one song that had a clean instrumental a cappella. And you know, I didn't know really about record pools, so I didn't have records being sent to my house.
Mm-hmm.
So if I wanted doubles, I would have to pay another.
That's right.
And it got really expensive, but.
It was kind of a trade-off when you started buying the Lethal Weapons because, like you said, you didn't have that instrumental or you didn't have that acapella, you know, to play with. But they give you a nice, clean intro,
no extra
samples or anything like that, and went right into the song and then gave you that out on the backside,
nice
too,
there.
Which was really great, you know. The mix factors were good, too, because they give you a break in the middle of the song as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of that, you know, like with the use of Serato now with the looping feature, how do artists or record companies look at that? Like, do they don't want you to edit too much their music or so? Are they real?
Yeah, sometimes, well, even like with radio, you can't really do too much to a song. You know, we got to stick to the original, the intro, and the instrumental, you know?
I see.
So
for instance, like, say if you're starting off a new cut, you know, will it be all right to extend that, like, say, 8 more measures just to do a talkover?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes
they let you do
I do
like
a lot
that,
of my short edits, too, like on Ableton. I'll do, like a short edit. We'll just have two verses and then, like, an instrumental out so I could do, like, an acapella over
that's
and stuff
tight.
Like that.
Yeah.
So I'll do that. But
they don't
as far
want you to
like,
jump
you know,
in the middle
doing
of the
a redrum
song.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
We don't really do nothing like that. We could throw like every a remix every here and then, but you can't do the whole mix.
Yeah.
You know, nothing but up-tempo remixes.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah, so.
That's tight there.
So talking about record shopping, what were some spots that you used to?
In high school, I was I didn't DJ. I always had like my computer, my desktop, my family desktop, but I would use Acid Music Studio, and so I would just go to like ASL and get these like X-Mix CDs and stuff like that. So I would just buy them. And I would make my own mixes, like, but I wouldn't do it live. I would just do it all computer.
Right.
And then when I was, like, junior year, my pops got me this dual CD player.
Yeah.
And so I would do these parties, but they would be, like, pre-mixed CDs that I would mix at home. And I would just jam it out at some party. And then my older brothers wanted to borrow the CDs, and then I would never see them again.
What players were the that
it
you
was,
had?
It was, like, a Newmark CD mix one.
Oh, yeah.
Like
that was the all-in-one unit.
Yeah, the
right?
all-in-one
was,
unit.
This
with
little,
like,
oh, man.
This little gold thing that basically just set up on the table with mixer built in and two CD players.
Some TV speakers, you know. Yeah, that's
Everybody wanted one at one time, so don't front. Hey, just real quickly, let me go ahead and give an ID to everybody out there. Thanks once again to listening to episode 18 of Behind the Crossfader. Make sure you guys hit us up at behindthecrossfader@yahoo.com and on our Facebook page at facebook.com/behindthecrossfader. If you see a love button on there, press that. But if not, just hit the like button and everything's all good. So thank you for blessing us with your eardrums, baby.
So growing up, you know, you guys have listened to and seen a lot of good DJs. Give me an example of some of your favorites, somebody that that really inspired you to keep moving on in this business.
I would have to say Mr. Chalk. I used to listen to him on Power 106. I was like a religious listener of Power 106. Every mix show, I would spend hours when I wasn't playing basketball or soccer. I would just listen. And Mr. Chalk is probably one of my favorite DJs. I mean, he's a legend in the game. So.
Yeah, definitely. What about you, Prentice?
I used to listen to the Desert Storm back in the day, Saturday Night Desert Storm. So, you know, I would always listen to Saturday nights while my brothers were getting ready to go out. I was in elementary school or something like that.
Tight.
So I would just listen, and then I would get mad when I would hear the same mix from the week before.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, here we go. So, yeah, I would, you know, listen to you guys, Hurricane, D-Wave.
Desert Storm was so dope because, I mean, just actually hearing, like, real scratching in a song. Not just, like, a fade in, fade out, but just hearing, like, that organic DJ. I mean, you can really just see the DJ doing it through your radio, and that was awesome.
Exactly.
There.
So, yeah.
Yeah, probably the funnest times was back then, though, Desert Storm, because, you know, after a while, their confidence in us got really high, so they would allow us to come in and mix live, you know, just set up some tables right on the desk there, and they would just allow us just to go crazy, and, you know, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Great back then, man.
What about live shows? You guys ever seen any any battle shows? Or I mean, you know, in California, almost every record store would have, you know, Invisible Scratch Pickles come in, or, you know, when they were coming up, or Beat Junkies or something like that. You know, there would always be a live DJ mixing in the record stores.
It's weird because I've seen a few at some of the record stores. There's a popular one in Los Angeles that does the DJ Scratch Academy, which is very popular. They have one in New York. I'm trying to see. I can't recall the name of the record store, but they would always have guest DJs battling and doing stuff like that. But I wasn't really into that scene. I didn't really know, like, about the DMC and the people battling. I was just listening to Mix Show and, you know, focusing on that and how I could use that to do better at parties and stuff. So I wasn't really in that scene.
Yeah.
What about you, Apprentice?
Me, fortunately, my brother looks just like me, my older brother. Yes. So I would use his ID to go to those spots when I was like I was like 15. So I would always go to like Vaudeville and check out Bone and Herm. You know, so I look up like to those downtown guys. You know, Bonus, Herm, and you know, there was some other cats, man, that used to play there that used to jam out. And so I would be like 17 going there Friday nights and just checking them out, you know.
Yeah,
so
I think that Ill Styles was started by Bonus and Deco. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Deco, there you go. Deco's
and
the one.
And Big Brother Beats used to play there
Big
a lot
Beats.
Too.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
that was tight.
Yeah, shout out to Deco, one of our brethren who lives in Oklahoma now.
Yeah, I was wondering what happened to him, man, because
Deco
used to get it in back then, man.
He was definitely one of the greats.
Yeah, he was great.
He's one of those cats, he'll play songs, and it's like, you know what, I should be playing that. He just, there's DJs, like Herm is definitely like this, but Deco is like, change your playlist. You listen to a guy, and they just change your playlist.
Yeah.
And I love DJs like that.
Yeah.
It went from where we used to check out somebody's skills, and we're like, oh, I want to do that. Now, it's their mind we're picking, like, damn, I'm going to start doing what he's doing.
Yeah,
nowadays it's easy because you can just Shazam it.
Yeah,
hold your phone up and go, I got that.
Or take somebody's memory stick. Like, I took George.
haven't got it back, by the way.
Yeah, I'm always taking this stuff. I'm like, I got to get that there. Yeah. So,
So how'd you guys get your DJ names? How'd that come about?
Finally, a good story.
All right, so let's say when I was about 10 years old, I used to have this, like, it wasn't really an afro. I'm half black, and my other brothers have more of my dad's hair, like the black hair. Mine's more of the straight hair.
Right.
So I had this crazy afro, and my friends would call me Shocker because they said it looked like I got electrocuted. So in high school, My freshman year, my friend was like, yo, you should, you know, try to use Shocker as a DJ name. And my best friend, his name is Ben, he goes, what about DJ Shock? So ever since then, I stuck with that name.
Now, when they started with that name, Shocker, was it something you didn't like them to call you, or did you accept it right away?
I accepted it, because it was fun, you know. Yeah. We were young. We didn't know. We were just having fun with it. So, you know, fortunately, I could use that for my DJ name.
Yeah.
One thing I love about DJ's names is that no matter how corny they sound, you can make it sound good.
Yeah.
Just by, you know, yeah. I mean, just imagine like, oh, Peanut Butter Wolf, get the hell out of
here. Yeah,
right.
Huge,
right?
Like, yeah.
Right.
Now it's like, wow, that guy.
So, I mean, I'm sure Apprentice came from, you know, getting lap dances at 14.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, man. They're like, oh, this guy's learning right here. You got to get him in.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, when I got out of high school.
I still cannot get over that, man.
Hopefully my mom is listening.
I'm going to email her when this is over.
Yeah.
So where did Apprentice come from?
Well, when I was 17, I started hanging out with D-Wayne again. And so that kind of just stuck with me around the station. They're like, well, either you're learning, you're the apprentice. And so I always try to learn, you know, everything new. So, you know, I kind of keep the apprentice because I'm always trying to learn something new. So it kind of works out. So it's cool, man.
Yeah. I mean, and it's a cool name, too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's a good, humbling name, too. I like that. There, so
yeah, man. So
you
it's
be at
cool.
the top of your game and have people that you're teaching. Like, hey, I ain't going to listen to you. You're apprentice.
So you guys, you both done parties coming up, you know, was it mostly like college parties? Did you do any kind of weddings? Did you guys ever, you know, jump into that realm of mobile DJing?
In high school or just in general?
In general.
I started out doing a lot of house parties, especially in high school. I did some crazy.
Project X type.
Yeah,
house
a lot of hood parties. I mean, you know, LA is a big city, and luckily I got to see some cool stuff in. Then I got my first gig at my brother's private high school. It was like an 800 kid dance, and I almost passed out. It was crazy. Like, I stepped up there, and like, it didn't hit me till right when it started. It's a whole nother ball game.
Yeah.
From, you know, doing little house parties to doing a full-on, you know, winter ball dance.
Ballroom, yeah, for
and
sure.
They're really strict with the music. And, you know, back in the day, the records were clean, but they weren't as clean. Like,
right.
Salt Shaker still
had
a few things, so you would just have to hope the dean or the warden, you know,
wasn't paying too close attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like the movies where the dean start twerking it.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
He'd be all stuck
up
and everything.
They have the nuns.
You
know, if you're dancing with a girl, so the nun walks over, what are you guys doing?
There was that 12-inch rule right there.
You should bring me along. I turn that nun out.
Yeah, you just go in the corner real quick.
I should go along with y'all back in those days. Here, so. That's tight. House parties, man. I really miss house parties way back in the day. House parties were just dead there.
Yeah, that was like where you went instead of the club.
Yeah, and it was like, it can be like a total stranger's. Like, you can open your house out to people you don't know. But you can just make your house the place to be and just charge people to come into your house. Okay. You don't know anybody there. So. And then the clubs came in, house parties went out there.
Yeah, that's for sure. What about you, Prentice? Any good party stories?
Well, I started, doing. I started doing like quinceañeras and stuff when I was, you know, a senior in high school and stuff like that. But I don't know if I ever mentioned to Shane, my freshman year at the U of A, he was a junior, I think, and I would still be doing these parties, but I would hear his name all around campus. I'd be like, who's this guy Shock, man? Because he'd be doing like all the frat and sword, these hot parties. I'd be like, damn, I need to get into that. So
I need to meet him.
Yeah. Like my freshman year, I would always hear about this guy around campus, and I'll be like, man, this guy's Shock. I need to take him down.
Great. That's great.
But yeah, I would, you know, I did quinceañera. I still do, you know, when the pay is good.
Yeah, do you really?
You still get out and do a
wedding or a quinceañera?
Like
yeah.
So I mean, I like keeping. I like, you know, I grew up with Spanish music, so I like listening to Tejano.
I love quinceañera until they make me do the announcements and the name.
Yeah.
You need a translator.
Hire me
a
little Mexican cat to come with me to DJ and he do the name there, but they're tight though.
So, I mean, I remember coming up doing, you know, doing parties and, you know, I did everything from, you know, car shows to backyard parties. I mean, you know, they used to make fun of me down at the station. You know, I'd walk in and turn in my mixes and be like, okay, so how many parties are you doing tonight? You know what I mean? But I was always one that, you know, for a long, long time, I didn't want to talk on a microphone. I just didn't like it.
Especially at these gigs. You know, it's way more difficult at the quinceañeras and stuff than the club, you know, because these are more formal events. So, you know, you got to be precise.
It makes sense because all of us, you know, was all about the music to begin with anyway. Right. We just focus on the music, not the mic. And then you realize that is a package deal later on in your DJ career.
I'm still like that. Like, I used to go with somebody else to these gigs, you know, these formal gigs. Yeah, and I'm just on the turntables. I'm like, all right, you go handle the voice work.
And just as we mentioned in previous shows, you know, when you hear the mixes from those old school DJs, maybe the mid-90s, everybody was shouting over their song. The music was just there, and they're like, yo, this is your jam, Big Booty Bruce, and we're up here throwing down here, son.
DJ Clue,
holla, you know, it was everything was just like, and you know, that's one thing I couldn't do. It was like an ego thing. I don't know, I felt like, it felt like an ego thing to be talking like, yo, check this out, this is the man, and putting it down for you.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm humble, I just want to play the music, that's all, you know.
What about you, Shaka? Lots of mic work in college?
No, because I would have those drunk white girls get on the mic. You know, they always want the problem with that. There's a lot of problems with that, but I'm still trying to work on my mic presence because it is very difficult. You know, you look at a lot of the DJs in Vegas, Vice, Eric Deluxe. Not only do they have great programming and clean mixing, they have really good mic skills.
Which definitely helps.
Definitely helps. But
so what do you do to work on that? I mean,
When I'm at the station, I'll try, you know, when we talk on the radio, or I'll try to just, you know, record something in the box, listen to it, delete it, record. You know, I want to start to learn how to do breaks, but, you know, not live, obviously, just fake breaks like what he does.
Right. I mean, that's great practice to do air checks, but that it never made it on the air. Just to kind of try to post that particular song, or, you know, I mean, and that's good because you got someone like Dwayne who's been doing it a long time, and his advice will go a long, long way.
Yeah, that's how it was for like the first 2 months I was on air. I would just, you know, he would do air checks with me every week.
Right.
And then, you know, he'd be like, okay, you need to up this. You know, you can't be, you know, so quiet. You got to be a different person on the mic.
Oh, yeah.
You
know,
so.
And I think it's difficult, too, because we don't see the people that's listening.
Exactly.
If you had that image of everybody listening to you, you got to really come on like that. And I heard one radio show where he was talking about how when you have, like, guests come in, like, comedians will come in. And they'll sit at the table just like us and like all four of us. And they think that it's just us listening to ourselves. Even right now, there's more people listening to us. There's lots of people listening to us all over the world.
Yeah.
But the comedians won't keep that in mind. So you'll figure like if it was thousands of people, you'll really come. Bring it. You know, so, and I guess that's, you know, DJing is probably difficult to see that at times where,
you're alone in this room,
in
you
this
know.
Room,
like,
you, your yeah, turntables, like, and your
staring,
music.
Staring at the computer, yeah.
There's people driving in their cars on the way to the parties, women getting ready to go out.
Yes, exactly.
All that's
especially
happening.
On the weekends,
exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes people are even having a party and they're just playing your radio in the background, too, you know.
Yeah.
Got to picture all that there.
Forget about that sometimes, so.
Yeah.
I think it's more difficult to be in that studio and to try to create that energy than when you're out and you have 400 or 500 people in front of you.
Somebody's flashing you either.
Yeah. You got to think about what you got to say, you know?
Yeah.
Can't
just
get on the mic.
Cool,
man. Well, if y'all need me to do voiceovers, I'll go over there.
What's up, everybody? I need you to
listen to
DJ
Apprentice and DJ.
Yeah, I need that, man.
No, you know who I want to be like? Who's that one DJ on the NWA skits or so?
The Snoop Dogg, DJ.
Get that bullshit out of that bullshit. Get that out of here.
That guy was great. I think everybody wanted to be him when you heard when Doggy Style came out.
And that one, what was that one Dog Pound song when he's like, DJ Easy Dick, wake your goat mouth ass up. It was just so funny. One can dream.
So you guys are now doing club gigs and And like being a radio DJ, how do you think people perceive you differently? You know, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of club DJs over the years, but not everyone has had the opportunity to, you know, to have that kind of recognition because, you know, you know, I'm sure people getting ready and going, well, you know, I'm listening to Shock's Mix right now and I'm going to go see him in an hour. I mean, do you guys feel like any added pressure because, you know, you got to be on point all the time?
It doesn't hit you until like some of the mixes or most of the mixes are pre-recorded,
right,
obviously,
right,
we can't
right.
be there, but when we're live, but if, let's say, you know, my homegirl's driving me or I'm with one of my boys and they're listening while I'm sitting in the car, it really settles in that him and a shit ton of other people are listening and, you know, they're getting pumped. The girls in the mirror, like, we're about to go to RPM.
Right, exactly.
And you got to kind of carry that. So that's why I keep, you know, my programming, my simple ins and outs, the way I do at the radio at the club, because I feel like it brings the same kind of vibe.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
the programming, you know, a lot of DJs don't really understand the concept of programming. And programming is not sitting down and saying, all right, I'm going to play this song at this time. No,
right.
I just wing it still.
Sure,
but I still have that programming.
Well, you know, it's funny, in a sense, you know, before we do certain gigs, that's like we're programming, you know, when we kind of set up playlists or so, where, you know, like, you know, especially when we're doing other people's guest nights, you know, we're saying, what's the vibe of the place? What's the people? And that's, you know, we're doing the same thing, you know.
I find it more difficult when you're the guest than when you're the resident, you know, because you never want to disappoint. You know that this crowd is used to one thing, and you want to make sure that you're on that same level. You know what I mean? So I always find it more difficult being the guest DJ than it is being the resident. Because once you become the resident and you get this crowd used to you, you can pretty much do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
See,
but you're not going to come in and drop, you know, something that you know works for your crowd may not work for someone else's crowd. You know,
also,
so you got to have that respect.
I always felt a little guilt, though, on the flip side of that, because I'm going in there doing maybe an hour and a half set, and that's all I have to worry about, where that person's in there each week, and you can squeeze so much goodness into that little bit of time. And I always feel somewhat guilty. So even though I was just talking to Big Brother Beats about it, because he asked me to come up and probably do a set with him on his Tuesday night at Zona 78. And, you know, me and him were talking. I talked to Herm about this, where, you know, I'm trying to get DJs in a habit to really respect their being a guest in a DJ's place. You know, let me know what kind of vibe you want me to do. You know, maybe they should even start using different terminology. Like, hey, Terry, would you like to open up for me? Rather than, would you like to just do a guest spot?
Yeah.
Would you like to warm up the crowd for me? And I can respect that because I think, you know, I probably mentioned it on another show or even off the air where, you know, they say, okay, Fatso, could you do a guest spot at Zen Rock? It's like, okay. And every DJ, whoever's doing a guest spot, they're like, wow, let me get in there.
Yeah.
Ooh, 1 hour, I'm going to set it off, you know. And I got to, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I want to just blow it up rather than just keeping the whole vibe as a, you know,
yeah,
a complete
I think that's
package.
How I felt with Level because DJ Fatal, he actually, like, the one that brought me into Level when I was, like, 19. So, and it was a whole different crowd there, you know. It's more of a lounge. And I think he's the one that introduced me to, you know, this disco kind of lounge music.
Yeah.
And so I fell in love with it. So, it helped me, you know, build my music library.
Yeah.
But then it helped me, like, to understand different crowds also.
Yeah.
So.
Which is really impressive, too, because, you know, when I did listen to your mix, and I was blown away by the songs that you're selecting.
And,
you know, I'm somewhat, you know, more of a funk head, but I dig a lot into the disco. And I'm
you're talking about his SoundCloud mix,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that's
excellent.
Yeah, I really like that
and
one.
And I
thanks,
was like,
man, I appreciate that.
I never played this song. I never played this song. I never played this song.
Right. Yeah,
and that was really deep. You put a lot of thought into it. It's so easy. And disco is one of those things where it's like shooting fish in a bucket. It's so easy, so you got to really challenge yourself
exactly.
a little bit. To do something different. I guess it's not as challenging, you know, it seems simple, but for you to go deeper into it was just like, wow, you know, that was like on a whole nother level, so.
Yeah, I love that sound, man. I try to play that, you know, wherever I go, but, you know, in radio, of course, you can't do that,
exactly.
So that's why I like to do those, you know, SoundCloud mixes, because I like to play stuff that I like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's cool.
Yeah, you ever find that you go to a club and they expect you to play a certain
type
of music because you're a mix show DJ?
They pretty much
think that that's all you know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. So. Well, at Sapphire it was a little different because you know they knew that I was on radio. They knew that I was on a hip hop radio station, so they kind of want more dance stuff, and they didn't know that I knew how to play dance music. So
they were
kind of impressed with that. So I was like, oh,
so
cool,
you get
man.
Both sides of it where they'll want you in, and then they're like, I'm not sure.
Yeah, exactly. So. Until I have to prove the first
that
week
you can
that
do
it
other
was good.
Things there.
So yeah, it was cool.
So what's on tap for the All-Star Mix team right now over at Hot 98?
We're trying to get more mixers on, actually. You know, it's a little tough right now, because, there's so much stuff going on and stuff like that. We're fortunate to have Kid Cuts on.
Definitely.
So, as far as being on air, I really want to, be more of a mix show coordinator guy where I'll be, have the mixers on Fridays and Saturdays and, have them do their thing while, I like to host or something like that. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think there was a time where Friday and Saturdays, I think we started a mix show at 9 and, went to 2 in the morning.
I remember that, man.
It was, all night, know. And I think there was, maybe 6 of us back then. So, you could, you still had your different flavors, what I mean? So,
everybody's different, too,
Yeah.
If they hear me and Chalk, it's two different complete people. But
sure.
I think it was good. It was a good idea to bring Kid Cuts because they hear me 7 days a week, six days a week. So of course, we gotta switch it up. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was an awesome idea. So like I said, I know Shock answered this question, but do you find the pressure from going right from radio to the club, as far as what they expect or?
Well, as far as right now, because I'm at Sci-Fi, I'm sure they're gonna expect something different. So it doesn't worry me too much because I'm not going to be doing the same thing that I'm going to be doing on radio. Mm-hmm. And, of course, on radio you have to be more, you have to stick to the playlist and stuff like that. So, I find it interesting that they'll go.
Four powers, three
recurrents. Yeah. You got to go to current. You can only hit one gold, stuff like that. I think it's cool, if they go, it's going to be different. So they can't expect to hear what they hear on the radio.
So being in the club, you guys, how do you get them? How do you guys handle requests? That's one big question that started a lot of controversy when we first started the show because, I've seen responses from DJs out there that's just like, hell no, you came to watch me. I'm not taking any requests. Yeah. What's your opinion there, Sean?
Well, first off, as a DJ, we're getting paid to provide a service to the people, so... If anybody comes up to me and says, hey, can you play this song? I'm not going to say no. I'm going to, think about it and say, hey, maybe I can throw this in the mix. But, at the end of the day, I'm not here playing what I want to play for me.
Exactly.
I'm playing what I want to play for them. So, and a lot of times you will get the same request. So if a few people say, hey, can you play this Snoop Dogg or this song? I say, oh, yeah, I got you. I'll throw it on. Other people want to hear it.
Yeah.
But a lot of DJs are just like, no.
Yeah.
No. Get away from me.
Yeah,
and it's like...
Right.
They're here for you.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You need to be there.
They're paying your salary. Yeah.
That's the trip. Maybe the comparison is not warranted, but, I was just thinking of a recording artist. Say if Prince was on stage or Snoop Dogg, and DJs are not the only ones that deal with requests. Performance artists deal with requests, too. And just I can just imagine, somebody going up to Beyonce saying, or shouting from the audience, could you play this? And they're like... and it's hard to imagine artists thinking some DJs where I won't do no requests or whatever. I don't know. Maybe it's a little different.
Well, I find that a lot of artists now in their live shows are doing covers. They're not just doing their own music. And so I think in a way they're kind of opening themselves to it was a time where Beyonce or Destiny's Child would just play their hits and that's it. But now I find that
everybody's starting to
kind of cross over and do an old school cover or just to kind of change things around.
It probably is different because it's their own song anyway, so they're you're just asking them to be them.
What about you, Apprentice? I heard you just push people out of the DJ.
I hate it, man.
Get out of here.
I gotta get a security guard right there by the DJ booth and be don't let anybody up here. I think I handle them pretty good. So far there hasn't been some crazy requests. Of course, at Quinceañeras and stuff like that. You gotta play what they want.
Those are the tough ones.
Because it takes you a long time to build that dance floor.
Yeah.
And then they want to hear something, and they'll just stand there.
So you're trying to mix Lil Wayne with Lil Joe.
They won't leave.
Exactly.
They won't leave.
But as far as as far as the club, sometimes they'll ask for a lot of hard hip-hop records, you know, that they know I can't play.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll try to be like, can I play something else? You know, what about this?
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so
right.
I'll try to substitute it for something
kind
else.
Kind of steer them in, yeah, a, in yeah, another direction.
And yeah, most of the time they're wasted, so they'll be like, okay, yeah, yeah.
I bet you there's people that don't, that'll try to push the envelope when they know their request is not really appropriate, and then there's some that think it is. So
yeah,
I'm starting to see some like, well, I know this is way out there, and could you play this? And they know it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Mac Dre or something wild.
So, yeah. So before we close up the show, I really would like for you guys to each kind of give that 16-year-old, that 15-year-old some advice as far as, yeah, you know, aspiring to be on the air, whether it's a jock or as a mixer.
How to sneak in clubs and everything.
Yeah,
that's the hustle, boy. That's like, that's serious. That's the hustle, boy. You do that, you're in there.
I think, you know, I think it's all about, you know, grind. You know, especially in Tucson, especially in today's market, anywhere, it's all about grind. And, you know, if you do it the right way, you know, I'm not saying Bug, D-Wayne, or, but if you do it
I'm
the right.
I'm saying Bug, D-Wayne. Yeah. Call him 3 times a day.
Yeah. Yeah,
you have to give it.
Yeah, you have to give it.
I'm just kidding.
But I think it has a lot to do with, you know, practicing and, you know, networking, going out to the clubs and meeting people, because, you know, I don't realize how many DJs look up to me here in Tucson, so it was nice to kind of talk to, you know, some of the DJs, DJ Knockout and a few other guys that I met the other day.
Right.
And, you know, it means a lot to me that they're listening to me, so I know there's a lot of young cats listening to me, so they can just take, yeah, you know, my hustle and you know, this didn't happen overnight. It took me a good 4 years, uh-huh, before D-Wayne sat me down and said, hey, we liked your hustle, you're respectable, you know, you kind of get what we're trying to do here, and they finally put me on. So,
and I think that's the thing, is the impression is that it does happen overnight.
Yeah.
You know, people be like, well, I never heard of you before, and all of a sudden you're on the radio. And they don't get that you've been on that,
yeah,
grind for a long, long time.
Yeah, like, yeah. I told him, I remember, you know, even though I was the big college, you know, hot DJ, I was listening to Apprentice on Saturday nights,
right,
mm-hmm, mix
right,
show all the time, and being like, yo, yeah, it's
and
dope.
At the same time,
yeah,
he was trying to take you,
yeah,
out.
Yeah. So, I didn't know about Apprentice, but I was like, oh, the DJs can't,
yeah,
step on me. I'm pretty sure,
yeah,
I
mean,
like, got this, but with the radio, you know, when
that
I'm
also
Robinson,
that also helps too, having that little, Dwayne was talking about that little sizing other DJs up, that little battle thing. I think,
yeah,
every DJ should have like a 5% battle attitude,
yeah,
in their,
exactly,
head all the,
yeah.
I think we're gonna always have that where you're like, okay,
yeah,
and even now it's like a friendly thing, like, you know, when me and George was rocking La Casina, he's like playing cuss like, oh man, no he didn't,
yeah,
no,
yeah,
he didn't,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's
oh,
like
man,
a fun thing, but
I love that place,
but it,
man,
helps,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
man, that is,
yeah,
that, you know, if anybody gets the opportunity to bug Herm enough to get,
yeah,
a guest spot there, that's where you really want to be,
yeah,
you know,
great,
it's a lot of fun, yeah,
you can't help but leave a better DJ playing there.
So
you
how
can,
about some advice from DJ Apprentice?
I would probably have to say, like, always, you know, always be hungry to learn and be humble, because I think that's helped me out the most. I mean, I was always like, you know, when I was 13, I always wanted to learn. That's, you know, I still do. So, you know, I always bugged Saul and D-Wayne and like, hey man, can you please let me go tonight? Stuff like that. And I didn't think he would remember me when I met him when I was like 16 at the Vaudeville, and I met up with D-Wayne again. I didn't think he would remember me, and he did. So I was like, oh man, that's awesome. So,
yeah,
you know, I still tried, you know, to learn whatever he told me. Uh-huh. And it was crazy because at the station, that's when they stopped sending vinyl. So we would have to use vinyl and CDs at the same time,
right,
you,
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
so we,
right,
go back and forth. So I was,
wow,
like, you know what, if it takes me to learn this, then I'm going to learn, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you know, I think staying humble and trying to learn whatever you can.
Yeah.
That's great
that's
advice.
That's really important.
Yeah, yeah, that's great advice.
That's one of the pillars that I'm, you know, this show, you know, what I learned from doing this show. Every person that we had on this show is like something I can learn from. Our last guest, the Power Mix, I'm have some ideals I want to do, and I'm thinking about calling them up and learn,
yeah,
from them. Grappler. Oh,
yeah,
but
like 2 days later, you had a little video out,
yeah,
after the Power
own,
Mix.
You made his own video in,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you did a slideshow, remember?
A slideshow?
Yeah, yeah. You put a little video mix out. Not a video mix,
one,
but
it was
but
like
it was
a
kinda,
slideshow of my
kinda,
family.
Yeah,
members.
That
oh,
one. Yeah,
and
yeah.
The reason why it's not there is that the copyright thing with BB King, the music,
oh,
I used,
I see.
You have to take it off.
I saw it right away.
But even me and Grappler, you know, I'm learning from him. And, you know, even on the show, he was giving us tips. Or even you, when you were talking about scratching, trying
right,
to get your other, you know, your least dominant hand.
Yeah.
It's always something that, you know.
I grew up with the kind of DJs that always emphasized, you know, being able to do the same thing on your right hand than you can with your left. You know, and that was always really important from the guys that I learned from. So, you know, I always try to teach that, you know, to the next generation.
Exactly. And it made so much sense because my job is doing stuff with my hand work and not in porno movies. Dirty bastard. but it makes so much sense because
Terry's the number one fluffer in Arizona.
Always doing stuff with my hand. And now I'm starting to do things with the left now. But I like that. You know, that's a good name to have. I mean, it's just really, you know, I miss that in DJs. You know, I like when people put aside their egos. And nowadays, even the Tucson DJs, you know, like, we're jocking each other. Like, oh, my God, MGM, you're dope. Oh, Fatso, you're dope. Everybody's, like, jocking each other. It's kind of funny, you know. It's like we were, like, saying it at the same time. Oh, that was bad.
Yeah.
You were bad.
Yeah, right.
It's like, you know, like a cool movie, so.
So before we go, I wanted to tell everyone where they can find you online, or, you know, your gigs everywhere they can see
you. Facebook, you can hit me up, facebook.com/TheRealShaneJones, and then Twitter is @TheDJShock, so you can hit me up there, and I'm always available.
And also, you got RPM on Saturday nights?
Yes, I do RPM Saturday nights, Zen Rock Friday nights, and then when school starts back up, I'll be doing Gentle Bends on University.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's kind of nice because on Thursday, I can play more of the top 40 like Apprentice. You know, it's nice to get away because Friday and Saturday, I'm still banging the Tigers and the YGs. And come Thursday, I can play, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
What's tight is that you can even incorporate that playlist into what you're doing anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a cut and dry.
And a lot of the U of A students, you know, they listen in the closet. Like, they won't write it down on paper that they listen to Hot, but these college kids are listening to Hot. So
y'all see the numbers.
It's cool to know that I can, you know, bring a little bit different style to the table at Gentle Bends and throw them off a little bit because people are so used to me playing the 70s, 65.
Right.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, the hard, you know, bullshit. Love.
It's got to be done, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
You might as well be doing it.
Yeah.
So, Apprentice, what about you? Where can we find you?
I have my own little blog on Hot 98.3, and that, you know, you could go there. I have my Facebook, my Twitter, and even my email, you know. I always like to get feedback.
Twitter?
Yeah, DJ Apprentice at Twitter, Facebook/DJ Apprentice. And then I have a SoundCloud. And a Podomatic. I try to put a podcast every month, so a monthly podcast.
Oh, nice.
So I'll have one up this weekend for my July podcast.
Your regular club gig is
Sapphire on Saturday nights.
And then you're also on the air regularly.
Yeah, I'm on the air at 6 to 11, and then I do the 5 o'clock traffic jam every day at 5 o'clock, and the 9 o'clock nightclub at 9.
Right on. Well, it was a real pleasure, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been trying to schedule this for some time now, and these are some very busy guys, so it's good to finally get them on the show.
Yeah, thanks for blessing us with your presence, man. Really appreciate it there.
I always like talking about, you know, how DJing was back in the day, so I always like talking. You know, I work with Blade like twice a week every week, so he always tells me how it used to be, so it's fun, man. It's like hearing about it, so.
It is fun, man. You know, that's how the show got started, just talking about it. Sometimes it feels almost as good as spinning it.
Yeah.
And just the discussion of it, you know. And, you know, our DJs, we're almost like in our own little world, like aliens on a planet. Everybody else just get the end result. You know, we're the ones, you know, working in the butcher shop, so.
Yeah, man.
No matter how many times we live those moments that we brought up, you know, that we used to have years ago, you still get that tingly feeling of, like, being there last night. Like, I remember a lot of these parties, like, I did a party with Big Black. These kids rented out Breakers Water Park. Brought buses full of, you know, hot sorority girls, and we just went crazy. And I dream about that night still. So it's nice that we can sit here, you know, especially us looking up to you guys and hearing your stories and hearing the change, you know, the evolution of DJing from when you guys started to when we started.
Right.
Yeah.
Right on.
On that note there, thanks for joining us once again for Behind the Crossfader with my man, DJ Apprentice and DJ Shock. And I'm Terry. I almost forgot my name. Terry DJ Fatso Haymore.
Love Maker Haymore.
DJ Morgan Freeman.
Baby Maker Haymore.
Baby Maker Haymore.
Love George Gonzalez, Arizona's DJ Hurricane.
Yeah, I'm a baby making Morgan Freeman, DJ Man Candy or whatever.
DJ Fluffy Fluff.
Fluffy Fluff. Check it out. Rather in life, love, and music. All you people out there listening to us, always stay in the groove. Peace.
Peace.